Thank you very much, Denis, and also Alain, who is not here, I think. For the kind invitation. It's great to be here. It's an exciting meeting. So as Denis sort of started his introduction, regeneration and developmental biology, they are rooted in the same question. How is an organism or part of an organism formed? So it is more than natural that they are sort of studied together, and that the studies are intertwined that we have seen already from the excellent talks earlier today. I thought that I would start by a short answer to the question of the conference, and that will be very similar to the other speakers, that the answer to the questions based on our studies on newts, that it's really context dependent. We study mainly limb and brain regeneration in newts, which are aquatic salamanders, by the way. And in terms of how new cells are generated for regeneration, I would say that in the context of limb regeneration, it's very different from development. In the context of brain regeneration, quite similar. But today I will not talk about brain regeneration. I will stick to the limb, and probably at the end of the talk, if time allows, I'll speak about some quite preliminary data about development, actually. So an equally important question, of course, is whether adult regeneration and embryonic regeneration are the same or not, and especially in the context of the salamander field that's being intensively discussed. The two models that are most frequently used are the axil and the newts, and the axil is used mostly in the larval state, while newts are post-metamorphic animals. And what is important here is, again, to think about the context. It's not easy to say that just because one animal is larval or adult, it's only larval or adult modes of regeneration processes occur. For example, just because the axil is used in larval stages, its limb is composed by all the structural elements that exist in a mature limb. While if you look conversely, when you look at the newt, it's an adult animal, but the brain is full of neuronal progenitor cells that are remnants of embryonic development. The bottom line is that it is important to study many different organisms, and I think that it's great in this field, and that this conference is a very good illustration of it, that the interest and the tolerance for studying unusual model organisms, which are hard to investigate, but hopefully they can reveal some interesting mechanisms. And in my talk, I'm going to illustrate how we do this in the lab, oscillating between development and regeneration, and oscillating to some extent also between species, newts on one hand, and we have done some experiments using mice as a mammalian model. So this experiment is an amazing set of study that shows that regeneration capacity in newts does not depend on age, nor the number of regeneration cycle. Goro Eguchi, who did this study, he initiated it when he retired, so he didn't need to think about grants any longer, and he thought that, okay, he does this important experiment. He took a bunch of newts, he lentectomized them, the lens grew back, and that was independent on the number of lentectomies, and also independent of age. Actually, it also shows that the newt is an organism which is a very good regenerator, but also it has a long life cycle. So they can live as long as a human. So there is no such correlation as regeneration versus short lifespan. Okay, so limb regeneration, it starts by closure of the wound. Underneath the wound epidermis, a mesenchymal growth zone, the blastema is formed, and that blastema is the structure that gives rise to the new limb. And it's actually transplantable. So if you take that blastema and transplant to an ectopic site, which is permissive, it will give rise to a limb. So understanding blastema formation is very important to understand limb regeneration. So the question that we have been studying quite intensively is where the new cells come from, both in the context of limbs and brain. And this is sort of the usual way how you think about the process, that there's a stem cell that differentiates to different lineages. And in the new, there have been indications of the reversal of the process, namely that the differentiated cells, as a response to injury, goes back to a stem cell-like state. And the word dedifferentiation was discussed here already, and as I think Simone asked this question, what is meant by dedifferentiation? And I think it's, again, we have to be very careful with the definitions. Sometimes dedifferentiation is meant by just exiting the quiescent state and downregulating some markers. What I'm going to show is more a much more radical manifestation of an in vivo reprogramming. And the model that I'm going to talk about is skeletal muscle. And Shargim already nicely introduced the system. When we injure our muscle, satellite cells are the ones that repair it. But there is another way going on in newts, as I'm going to show you, namely that the differentiated, is this on, the red? I don't see it from here, but okay, hopefully I'm pointing to the right direction. The myofibers actually go back and give rise to proliferating progeny with their ability to redifferentiate. Oh, thank you. Oh, very good, thanks. So there have been indications for that, it's also important to divide this term into the specifics. So it's as you heard from Shargim, the muscle fibers, a syncytial cell. So it has to fragment. It has to re-enter the cell cycle or the progeny of the fragments, and of course to lose myogenic markers. This is something that in mammals have never been seen. And the way we have studied this is to try to do lineage tracing, which is a challenge in newts. And this movie shows sort of the principle of the tracing. This is an in vitro culture, but using genetic means, what we can do is to very specifically label the myonuclei. And as you can see here, only in this movie, only the myonuclei are turning up the green marker. So then we know that whenever we trace the cells and we see green cells, they are derived from a differentiated muscle cell. So in the limb, what we have done is to transfect actually the adult limbs with these tracer constructs that were used in this movie. where the reporter is integrated into the genome, and then they are driven by by a muscle specific promoter, where Cre is driven by a muscle specific promoter. And then we, after recuperation of these constructs, we amputate and carry out analysis. And this showed that indeed, and these are the control experiments here, and these are the labeled myonuclei, that after amputation, there is a good number of cells that are derived by dedifferentiation, and they lose myosin heavy chain and other myogenic markers and re-enter the cell cycle based on the incorporation of a nucleotide analog. I will come back to that. This is quite an inefficient tracing method because we had to electroporate adult limbs, so it's not a very efficient system. Anyway, the long-term tracings showed contribution to muscle all along the proximal distal axis, except the fingertips, but there is not much muscle there. So this method was also used to identify a number of molecules. That was done in collaboration with Eli Tanaka's group, actually. But the in vivo experiments were performed in our lab to identify different molecules that promote the cell cycle reentry of this quiescent and traditionally considered post-mitotic nucleus. So one is a Marx-like protein, which is a very interesting case because in most species it is not secreted, but in salamanders it's a secreted molecule. And the other one is a protease-activated fragment of BMP4. So we have used these tools to try to identify different molecules that promote the cell cycle reentry of the dedifferentiation process. So what are the key differences? So mammalian muscle cells do not dedifferentiate normally, at least newts do. We have looked at different aspects and doing comparisons, and what we have seen, which was quite surprising, that there is a difference in the retention of centrosomes. So centrosomes are very important for cell division. On this side of the panel, you can see in vitro generated muscle cells, and along differentiation, they gradually lose centrosomal markers. So there are a couple of examples, centropin, pericentrin, CEP-135, and so on, gamma tubulin, of course. In vitro, some of the markers are still expressed, but when we look at the fibers, then everything is gone. However, when we compare with the newts, then we definitely see very clear structures that are centrosome-like structures and which also express centrosomal markers. Obviously, this could be a key difference in their ability to resume the cell cycle by these cells that are derived by fragmentation of the myofiber. We have also looked at the microtubule organizing activity of the newt myofibers, which is an indication of the active centrosomes, and it clearly shows that they retain this activity, and that's very different from mammals. And when we look at the tracing, and now the traced myofiber-derived cells in the blastema are labeled by red, then we see that the the myofiber progeny in the blastema have centrosome-like structures. We can't really say that they are centrosomes, but the data suggests that. So this provides an interesting difference at the cellular level, why newt myofiber progeny would be able to resume proliferation in contrast to the mammalian counterparts. And actually, in earlier studies, we have seen that when we force mammalian myotubes to de-differentiate with methods that we have learned from our newt studies, we saw that while if you do that with C2C12 cells, which is a myogenic cell line, which has been cultured in for 40 years, they do re-enter the cell cycle if we force them to de-differentiate. But primary myotubes, they never do that, unless we knock down P53. So this is quite expected in the sense that if you try to proliferate without centrosomes, the defense mechanism by an organism is to kill those cells, because it's a typical example of how cancer cells can divide without centrosomes. So this is quite consistent with the data we had on the centrosomes. And but once they do that, then these mammalian myotube-derived cells, they have the potential to proliferate. They can redifferentiate to myotubes. And if we implant them into injured muscle, then they contribute also to muscle regeneration. Now, I was mentioning that we have done for a long time all our studies studying a newt species, which has a very complicated life cycle. Its generation time is at least 2 or 3 years. So doing genetic studies is very difficult. So we were looking for alternatives and rediscovered an old friend in the zoo, and that is the Iberian newt, Plurdils valdel. Now, the good thing with this animal is that it is a true adult, so it goes through metamorphosis. It is easy to breed under laboratory conditions. It is diploid, and you will laugh, but it has a relatively small genome, 20 gigabases, because usually salamanders have much larger genomes. So we sequenced the genome and transcriptomes, and we have divided the genes into different ontology groups and identified those which are shared with other vertebrates. Some appear to be salamander specific, some appear to be amphibian specific, not so surprisingly. Why the genomes of the salamanders are so large is not known, but we have seen expansion of a number of elements, and especially transposable elements, gypsy and harbingers. Now, the harbinger are very interesting because they are very rare in other vertebrates, and the expansion in Plurdils valdel is unprecedented. And the harbingers are also distinct from other transposable elements in that they carry amoeb-like gene, a proto-oncogene that acts as a transcription factor. Harbinger. Yes, it is. Yes. So another type of expansion is actually expansion of microRNAs, which has a embryonic stem cell specific seed sequence. Now, this is very interesting because these microRNAs are usually in mammals, only expressed in the early embryo. They are very important in the maternal to zygotic transition after fertilization. And they have been also shown that just by transfecting fibroblasts by these microRNAs, it's enough to generate iPS cells, so induced pluripotent cells. So this was quite interesting in the context of newts, that you have an expansion of these microRNAs, given the fact that now they are expanded and also they are expressed in the adult animal. And we could also see that both the harbingers, but also the, in this context now, the microRNAs are re-expressed and heavily upregulated after limb amputation. So going back to this issue whether regeneration and development are the same mechanism, same process, it's clearly, it seems that a developmental process which is occurring early in mammals, and the components of it are reused here in the adult context. But it doesn't necessarily mean that reprogramming is complete in the sense that the cells that are generated during limb regeneration are becoming multipotent or totipotent cells. And that's actually not the case. So when we look at our tracing data, we do see that even though dedifferentiation of muscle in terms of fragmentation and cell cycle reentry is a very radical reprogramming, but they don't shift lineage. They still retain the memory. So they only give rise to muscle. They don't give rise to cartilage or to other tissues. So how this memory is maintained is very interesting. We have no idea. But the point I'm trying to make that there is reprogramming. Reprogramming may use mechanisms that have been sort of brought from early embryonic development to the adult tissues, but it's not used exactly to the same extent. So going back to Shragim's work and the satellite cells, so the question is, okay, there is muscle dedifferentiation going on in salamanders, but is it so that satellite cells do not play a role? And actually, we did find satellite cells in newt muscle. What we did not find is PAX7 expressing cells in the blastema. But of course, that could mean different things. It could mean that they do not contribute. It could mean that they do contribute, but they downregulate the marker. So we are trying to devise means to understand the role of satellite cells and PAX7 in order to understand the relationship between satellite cell activation and the differentiation in terms of how muscle contributes to the limb. This is also interesting because, again, if you compare two different salamanders, the axolotls and the newts, there's good data in the axolotl that muscle contributes only by satellite cells to the blastema and to muscle regeneration. So to start addressing this, we have mutated using CRISPR now and using the Pleurodial Svalte, the Iberian newt, the PAX7 gene. And obviously, if you look into muscle, you can see the loss of PAX7, but muscle development is normal. That's expected if you compare to mammals. There also seem to be cells in satellite cell position. That would also be the case based on the mammalian data. So we can't tell that they are satellite cells, but at least they are under the basement membrane, they are in muscle, and they don't express MEF2. But what is clearly different from mammals is that when we do a limb amputation, limb regeneration is completely normal, and when we look at the gross morphology, it seems that muscle regeneration is not affected. So this would be a clear difference that while in mammals, muscle regeneration is dependent on PAX7, that's not the case in the newt. It still doesn't say that dedifferentiation is the predominant mechanism, but for that, we would need to be able to trace the satellite cell progeny in the newt, and we are building those animals, but we haven't been able to finish those projects yet. Nevertheless, also for several reasons, one because we compared with the axle, well, the axle did not have two genes, PAX7 and PAX3. They had only PAX7. By the newt, there are PAX7 and PAX3, which are two related transcription factors and are both important for muscle development, among other processes. We mutated PAX3 as well. And then these animals are quite sick. That's not unexpected. But in the F0 generation, one can work with the mosaics, and we can look at animals which lack muscle in the limbs. And then came quite a surprise that when we had looked at these muscle-less limbs and amputated those, then we could see that limb regeneration was normal, but they had no muscle. So basically, in this context, muscle only gave rise to muscle, and there was nothing else that could contribute to muscle, which actually goes along the lines with the initial tracing data in the other newts. How am I doing with time? Okay. So I thought that given that this is about regeneration and development, I will finish off by showing some slides on actual development. This is because we have looked on these PAX7 mutants from other perspectives as well, not just muscle. Now, the PAX7 knockout mice, they die quite early after birth. Depending on the background, they can live a couple of days or a couple of weeks. Also, there are families, humans with mutations that have many different problems, failure to thrive, hypotonia, global neurodevelopmental delays. And obviously, but I don't think that there is much data on why the animals die so early. And I will not provide an answer, but I will provide some data on a problem that so far, I don't think been appreciated. Obviously that animals have problems may depend on that PAX7 is a neurocrest cell marker, so it's involved in the formation of many different structures and cell types in the body. The most obvious phenotype that we can see, you can just look at this part of the figure, is the pigmentation defect. So you can easily see which animal is a mutant and which is not a mutant. But PAX7 is also expressed in other structures, for example, in the pituitary gland, and especially in the intermediate lobe that secretes melanocyte-stimulating hormone. Now, that the pigmentation defect depends on that, shows this experiment, that a single shot of the hormone actually restores the pigmentation phenotype. What we see is actually that it's not that the pigments are are lacking, but they are actually concentrated, and upon hormones, they are redistributed normally. Now, since we are looking at brain regeneration as well, and the data that we have in the lab, I will not have time to show, my lab, sort of a postdoc, Alberto Jovan, realized that they have very interesting morphological differences in terms of the brain vasculature development. So this is a structure called the paraphysis, where from the dorsal side, there is a concentration of blood vessel ingrowth. And this is a posterior telencephalic organ adjacent to the choroid plexus of the third ventricle. And this is basically missing in the PAX7 mutants. There's not really known what is the mammalian equivalent of this, but the literature suggests that there is a structure called the lamina terminalis, which is also known to be involved in the vasculature development. So we started to look at the brain vasculature. And in the newt brain, that looks quite differently compared to the mammalian brain. So the mammalian brain has very branched vessels. The newt brain has few vessels, and they are mostly just loops. So they're easy to visualize. And it is clear that there is a huge reduction of brain vessel, blood vessel number, based on laminin staining or claudin-5 staining. And this has nothing to do with the growth size of the animals. Now, obviously, there could be many reasons for that. And one experiment shows that it seems to be a problem with actually blood vessel formation. So in a previous experimental setting, we looked at how hypoxia and reoxygenation affects neural stem cells. And that was published a couple of years ago. Now, we use the same system to create a hypoxic environment and ask how, which then, of course, should promote blood vessel formation. That is actually the case in the wild types, but not in the mutant. Another problem that that these animals have is an increased level of microglia. So with age, there is an increased number of microglia, which we think is because of infiltration, because when we look at proliferation or at apoptosis, we don't see any difference between the mutants and the wild types. And also now, this is a little difficult to understand this slide because you don't have the background here, but when we make an injury, a brain injury, which we usually do with a toxin, 6-hydroxydopamine, that kills a specific subpopulation, there is an increase in microglia, but in the PAX7 mutants, there is a constant inflammation going on, basically. Now, we were very interested whether this was just a newt thing or this was also valid for mammals. So we got some PAX7 mutant mice from Thomas Brown's lab. And we could see that looking in the brain of the mice, that there was a reduction similar to newts in blood vessel number. And also, when we look at the retina, which is sort of a proxy, it's easier to count, there is a reduction both in the vascularized area and also in the sprout length. Now, obviously, these are many phenotypes, or the phenotype could be explained by a large number of mechanisms, and I can't provide any answer to that, so I'm very happy to discuss if you have suggestions. But obviously, you can address this from different point of views. You can do molecular studies, You can see, you can try to look for, by lineage tracing, what cells in the brain, the PAX7 lineage gives rise to. And this is one experiment that we have done. Again, Thomas Brown sent us some crossings where all the PAX7 derivatives are green, and they give rise to different cell types in the brain. That was not new. However, what we think is new is that a subpopulation of cortical pericytes are derived from the PAX7 lineage. You can see in this magnification how these green pericytes that express PDGF receptor beta 2 are sort of encompassing the blood vessels. So we are actually zooming into this because pericytes are known both to regulate permeability, but also blood vessel formation. So we have chosen to go down this road and try to understand how pericytes may affect both the reduced number of blood vessels, but also the permeability, potential permeability of the blood vessels. So I think I'll stop here, and I'll just thank the people who have done the work. The people who are listed have all contributed in one way or the other, but mostly I'd like to highlight Alberto Chauvin and Ahmed Aleva, who have been working a lot with Pluridelas. Ahmed was instrumental to sequence the genome. Alberto was instrumental to analyze the PAX7 mutants, as Heng Wang, who has done most of the tracing experiments on muscle, and Gonzalo was doing, in collaboration with Monica Betancourt-Diaz in Lisbon, a lot of the centrosomal studies. So thank you very much for your attention.